So good to be back with you for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Professor Burton Malkiel, author of A Random Walk Down Wall Street. Well, it's a pleasure and a privilege to welcome Dr. Burton Malkiel, Professor of Economics Emeritus and Senior Economist at Princeton University, who penned A Random Walk Down Wall Street, the Bible of Successful Investors. His revised 11th paperback edition will be available January 5th, 2015. Welcome back to the show, Professor.
Thank you very much.
Before we jump into your magnum opus on A Random Walk, you also penned an article, and that was in the Wall Street Journal, "Are Stock Prices Headed for a Fall?" You express concerns regarding the frothy nature, as you see it, of stock prices, and you cite the CAPE ratio. This is an interesting price-to-earnings multiple that allows folks to get an idea of what might happen in the next 10 years or so. You point out that we're approaching 1929 and even 2000 levels, and we all know what happened after those interesting points in time. I wonder if you could tell us more about your observations here, please.
Sure, I'm happy to. Let me just begin by saying that it's important to say that nobody, and I mean nobody, can tell you what the stock market's going to do in 2015. It's anybody's guess. You see, particularly around the beginning of the new year, all kinds of forecasts. I think people should simply ignore them because nobody knows what's going to happen in 2015. Now, what you can say, however, is that there's no doubt that at least relative to historical precedent, that stocks are certainly not cheap today. This so-called CAPE ratio, CAPE stands for cyclically adjusted P.E. ratio. You try to kind of normalize earnings, and it's generally done by looking at average earnings over some past period and looking at what the price earnings ratio is based on these normal earnings. And that ratio today is at 27. And there's no question about the fact that that is very high. The normal CAPE ratio is in the mid to high teens. 27 is very high. And it has only been higher in 1929 and at the height of the internet bubble at the beginning of 2000. So we know that this markets are high, and in general, it's far from perfect, but the CAPE ratio does a reasonable job at predicting what 10-year rates of return are likely to be. And if you use that, what it suggests is not that the market is going to decline in 2015. Nobody knows that. But what it does suggest is that long-run rates of return from common stocks are going to be lower than in the past. During this whole last century for really the past 100-plus years, stocks have returned somewhere between 9 and 10%, and the CAPE ratio suggests that the rate in the future is going to be lower, that we're in a low return environment. Now, one of the reasons that stocks are so high is that interest rates are close to zero. The 10-year Treasury yield is 2.25%. That's an unusually low rate. So bonds are high, stocks are high. Does it suggest that there's going to be a fall in 2015? No, but it does suggest that investors ought to be realistic in what the earnings are going to be over the long term from their investments. And those earnings are going to be only in the single digits. Don't get used to the double-digit returns we've had over the last couple of years. They are unlikely to continue.
Very good. You know, it sounds like you're expecting or anticipating that typical return to the mean, that folks shouldn't allow themselves to get caught up in the hype with the market momentum. Do you by chance expect Dr. Yellen then to eventually pull the trigger, switch from this more dovish stance to more hawkish, and then allow rates to rise?
My guess is she and her compatriots at the Federal Reserve will do that in 2015. I do expect rates to rise. However, I think that they will rise only moderately. I don't expect that, you know, all of a sudden she's going to pull the punch bowl away. We've still got a lot of unemployment. Europe is still weak. Japan is still weak. There's a lot of excess capacity in the world economy. So I don't expect there will be any dramatic shift in monetary policy, but I think it is likely that sometime during 2015, rates will be allowed to rise very gradually.
You don't just give doom and gloom. You also offer a panacea for investors. You say that emerging markets have CAPE levels considerably lower, close to half that of U.S. equities, and that would imply, at least on a forward-looking basis, that there is some value there relative to U.S. stocks. It might offer an opportunity to diversify one's portfolio outside our shores. Please tell us more.
Absolutely. While the U.S. market is certainly high relative to a historical precedent, the valuations in many of the emerging markets are considerably lower. They are lower than average rather than higher than average. And as you put it in the question, they are perhaps one half or even less than the ratios in the U.S. market. And the emerging markets, they've slowed down. China has slowed down. Some of the other emerging markets have slowed down, no question about it. But still, even with the slowdown, the growth in emerging markets has been higher than in the developed markets. I think it is likely to stay higher than in the developed markets. And over the long pull, I think they are the place that's going to show the most growth, in large part because those are the areas where populations are younger and populations are growing. What is happening in the United States is that we are aging. The working population is not growing. In places like Japan, the working age population is actually falling. It's also true in Europe, which is aging rapidly. So in the long pull, the emerging markets are where the growth is going to be. The valuations are less. And I think one of the things that people ought to do in 2015 is look at the portfolio. The U.S. has been the place to be, no question about it. Last 2 years, the U.S. markets have been the best markets to be in. And so many portfolios are probably overweighted with U.S. stocks. Maybe this is the time to kind of rebalance, make sure that there is broad diversification, including diversification into the emerging markets, where I think the relative valuations are considerably better.
Do the recent currency concerns outside our shores, how does that factor into your analysis?
Look, there's no doubt about the fact that emerging markets are risky. There is no doubt that in some cases there is political instability. We all know that. We do know that there are currency concerns. And recently, with the dollar being particularly strong, all foreign currencies, including emerging market currencies, have been somewhat weaker. I'm not telling you that there is not risk associated with that. But one of the nice things about diversification is that when you diversify very broadly, it's almost a paradox that sometimes by including somewhat riskier stocks in your portfolio, as in from emerging markets, the whole portfolio can take it because the risks in one part of the world balance out with the risks in other parts of the world. And, you know, I'm not saying you put everything into emerging markets. If you have no money in emerging markets, you put 10% of your portfolio into relatively inexpensive emerging market stocks that you could do with an emerging market index fund or exchange-traded fund. You are not going to increase the risk of your total portfolio much, if at all, and you're likely to get a higher rate of return.
It's a great point, and you also have beta balancing impact, which could improve the overall expected return of one's portfolio.
Absolutely, and I think you will get that, and I think you will get that with still a prudently balanced, reasonably low-risk portfolio. Because, you know, as Harry Markowitz, who really was the one who won the Nobel Prize for developing the theory behind diversification, diversification is still, as Markowitz puts it, the only free lunch available in our securities market.
You also like tax-exempt bond funds. It's an interesting prescription, I think. You know, to boost the diversification aspects of your portfolio, you note that bonds with high credit offer above typical returns. Can you offer any more details, please?
Sure. What you get with a so-called total bond market portfolio is a portfolio that is over two-thirds U.S. government securities or government-guaranteed securities. And as we've just said, the government is keeping interest rates extraordinarily low. The 10-year Treasury is at 2.25. A total bond market fund yields not very much more than that, maybe 2.5%. And you can get higher rates of return with tax-exempt municipal securities. Now, what's happened is, and again, this is a, you know, being a kind of contrarian is generally not a bad thing in markets. What's happened is there's been a lot of publicity in 2014 about the problems of Puerto Rico, the bankruptcy of Detroit, and that has cast a pall on all tax-exempt government securities. And yet there are a lot of states in quite good shape, and the yields on these tax-exempt securities are higher than the yield on certainly government and government agency bonds. They're also tax-exempt. Remember that in the highest tax bracket, have a tax rate of 40%, not to mention state taxes. So if you pick a bond in a state in which you live and the state has an income tax, you're free from both federal and state income taxes. The yields are even higher than in governments and in a total bond market fund. This is where there is some value in the bond market. Is it a bit riskier? Yes. You know, if you want the lowest risk bond, you'd buy a U.S. Treasury security. But I don't think the risk is that much higher, and I believe that you are more than adequately compensated by the extra yield reward.
Very good. Well, Forbes publication had this to say about a Random Walk 11th edition. Not more than half a dozen really good books about investing have been written in the past 50 years. This one may well belong to the classics category. You know, that's high praise. I wonder if you could give us an overview of why you feel Random Walk is an investing classic and how come it could remain so for decades.
Well, I think basically its message really not only rings a bell with investors, but has been proven by time to be correct. Look, one of the basic messages, and it's re-emphasized in the 11th edition, is there are things in investing that you can't control. You can't control what the stock market's going to do in 2015. You can't control what the bond market's going to do in 2015. What you can control is your investment costs. The book from the first edition has recommended low investment costs. And one of the ways you can get low is to buy broad-based index funds or index ETFs. Cost of buying a total stock market ETF is very close to zero. It's a 20th of 1% or even less than that, whereas actively managed funds have expense ratios of about 1%. So this is the way that you can minimize your costs. Now, I know every year people will tell you, well, this is going to be the year when actively managed funds are going to beat the pants off of the market. We heard that at the beginning of 2014. Well, more than three quarters of the active funds were beaten by the stock market averages in 2014 as they were in 2013. And the ones that won, that is, that did beat the market in 2013, weren't the same ones as the few that beat the market in 2014. So this has been the consistent message. It works. And I think that's one of the reasons why the book has had such a following. And one of the things, of course, that I try to do in the 11th edition is actually set up sample portfolios for people, show them where the low-cost funds and ETFs are, show them how to diversify the portfolio, show them how to rebalance it over time. And those are, I think, timeless lessons that have proven through history that they work.
Sage advice indeed for the new upcoming year. You can pre-order the latest edition of A Random Walk at Amazon.com if you like. I think the key takeaway point here is that it works. It's pragmatic. You put statistics on your side and you sleep well at night knowing that you're diversified and that 100% of your funds are working for you. You won't wind up with, you know, a blown up account. Well, Professor Malkiel, what an honor. And you've been quite gracious, as you always are, with your time. We appreciate that. And we want to wish you a very safe and successful 2015.
I thank you very much for your good questions. And I wish you and your listeners a healthy and profitable new year.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.